And so here we are. Reading FC have wrapped up their last championship campaign for at least 12 months as they head into the abyss of League One on a wing and a prayer. Welcome to the Tyler Stem Podcast, episode 339 with your host, Mark Mayer. We've got a couple of shows for you this evening, which will be dripping out basically back to back as an option for listeners. And if you're listening to this one, then you've hit the angry option because we're doing the first part of this doubleheader to review the season. We're not going to do the usual thing of going through month by month, kind of pouring over certain games and stuff like that. This is a bit more of a bigger picture podcast where we're looking at what has gone wrong in the season and obviously previous to that, that has led to Reading's relegation. To do that with me, we're sat down. This is the start of a long evening of podcasting. Is Adam Jones, Tyler Sten, preview man. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, very good, thanks. I'm a bit sad that I haven't got a beer on my hand or something like that, as we usually do at the end of the season, but I'm sure we can make do with a Zoom and a good chat about everything Reading.
Yeah, definitely. It's a bit of a low-key ending for us this year, but it's a bit of a low-key season in so many ways. A few of us did have a little catch-up at the Huddersfield game, which was nice, but most people... cough, Ben Thomas didn't turn up, so there we go. let's get into it then. As always, thank you to our Patreon subscribers and our sponsors, SCZ Films. Let's get into the recap of what's gone wrong at Reading FC. Hope you got plenty of time.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
The first question then, Adam, for what has happened with Reading is, was this relegation avoidable? And if so, why? Because you look around at the Championship and you see a lot of teams that aren't bigger clubs, quote-unquote, or certainly are in the same bracket of club as Reading. And they've done pretty well. You look at your Prestons, your Millwalls, your Lutons, and some of these teams have momentum and have come up, you know. Some teams like Luton have come up and obviously riding the crest of a wave. Some teams like Preston, you know, they've just kind of got it right. And they've not got in the playoffs or anything, but they've done pretty well. And the future's kind of bright there as well. So it seems to me that Reading, by the general parameters of their money, their size, all that sort of stuff, perfectly achievable to do this sort of thing. And yet Reading have found themselves relegated. This surely was an avoidable relegation, wasn't it?
100%. I think it was avoidable. I think going into the campaign, I think we knew that we were going to get kind of be up against it a little bit. But then when we kind of managed to conduct all of our summer business and we managed to actually bring in some okay players, I thought that, you know, we'd be okay. Perhaps we'd be one or two spots above the relegation zone. I didn't think it was going to be an absolute breeze, and I certainly wasn't expecting to the start of the season that we had. But I thought that we'd perhaps maybe finish in 19th or 20th or something like that and kind of rely on other teams just being poor. And it looked as though we were going to survive, you know, for quite a long time. Obviously, the likes of Huddersfield, they were poor. Cardiff City as well. Blackpool obviously struggled under Michael Appleton. And I think that the appointment of Mick McCarthy was kind of a disaster, really. And in terms of Wigan, they just fell off really after a half decent start. So I thought, you know, midway through the season, I thought we were going to be, you know, reasonably safe, maybe kind of in a lower mid-table position. And unfortunately, we pretty much collapsed like a deck of cards, really. And that is really, really disappointing. I think in terms of the squad quality, you know, we've seen it in recent weeks. It isn't the absolute best. It's probably one of the least gifted squads that we've had in recent years, for sure, even with the likes of Lucas Zhao and Nyaku Mete. I mean, we just look a little bit awkward on the ball, to be honest with you, and just really uncomfortable. Maybe that's half because of the situation. You know, we have sat back for quite a bit of the season as well. So, you know, going forward, perhaps we've not been kind of accustomed to that, and we've you know, had a bit of a shock really trying to kind of get forward more and that sort of thing. But going to your kind of point, was relegation avoidable? I think it was, for sure. I think we had to sack Paul Ince way before we did. I know that we haven't seen a massive improvement under Noel Hunt, but with just a handful of games to go that he had, really, until the end of the season, you know, he wasn't really able to change very much. And you know, we should have dismissed Paul Ince, you know, some months ago, I think. I mean, I was very, very angry after the Cardiff City loss, the 1-0, where we just sat back. And I think at that point, I think I might have just gone at that point. And I thought, you know, definitely we should have sacked him. And I think that may have made a difference. You know, it would have given us time to bring in a permanent manager, perhaps, instead of Noel Hunt. I do feel like relegation was completely kind of avoidable. I think everyone has to take their responsibility right from the top of the club, perhaps down to the players as well. Perhaps the players lacked a little bit of bottle. I can't fault their effort at all. But I just think perhaps they lacked a little bit of mental strength when it was absolutely required, especially after the 6-point deduction.
Yeah, that 6-point deduction is ultimately the reason that Reading went down, in terms of the top reason, in my opinion. Ultimately, if it didn't happen, Reading wouldn't have gone down. It wouldn't have been easy. Maybe you could argue that the results would have changed and stuff, but we would still have. But I don't think we would have gone down without the 6-point deduction. And that's kind of the angriest point I have, really, is that, you know, was relegation avoidable? Yes. Was the 6-point deduction avoidable? It kind of feels like no. And whose fault do you lay at that? Certainly the EFL for greenlighting a business plan in which we would sell £12 million worth of players is ridiculous. And then this kind of land share agreement that would have happened to kind of get that money in anyway, for the EFL to kind of say it was okay, and then apparently there's a change of board and it wasn't, that's just ridiculous as well. But fundamentally, the fact that the club couldn't get their estate in order well enough to avoid these things happening is ludicrous as well. And on the particular point of player sales, one of the things I've always lamented about, certainly since Dion came in, was our complete inability to cash in on any kind of talent we had. There's one thing, letting players like John Swift and Josh Lauren go free. I mean, someone like Omar Richards, I think, is inexcusable, because why you let him get down to the last 18 months of his contract when it's just ridiculous that you'd think you'd let him go on a free anyway? That's one thing. Michael Olise is another player that gets talked about a lot. I have a bit of sympathy for that one, because I don't necessarily think he signs a contract with us unless you have that £8 million release clause. Maybe you could have knocked it up, whatever. But the ones that have always really annoyed me is the way that we've let players like Jack Stacey, Rob Dickey, to an extent Danny Loader, go, having, you know, Tariq Fosu as well. Dominic Hyams now in the Championship with Blackburn. These players, a lot of them didn't even get a look in at Reading. Obviously, you can take Loader out of that because he's a bit of a different situation. But, you know, we've let players go over the years that would certainly have made us money. At the very least, if we'd have given them a year in the team and they'd look really good, or the alternative, they look okay and we don't have to sign a player like, you know, Denzel Gravenberch and all these sort of lots who come in and ultimately didn't do much of a job and wandered off. It's just baffling to me that Reading found themselves in a situation where this 6-point deduction, this relegation, for me, it's because of that. It's because we don't do the fundamental thing in a football club of a second tier level and actually kind of generate players and move them on for profit. And you can talk about the player purchases and stuff. I mean, that would have been less of an issue had we actually, you know, brought through players and academy players like we're supposedly meant to do. And I just find that it goes all the way back to that. Those sorts of decisions, really, it's just the trail of breadcrumbs and paperwork that leads to this points deduction and relegation for me.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, you looked at Tariq Fosu on the final day of the 14-15 season, and he was just magnificent, really. Really did light up Pride Park. It was a very memorable day because we, you know, pretty much knocked Steve McLaren out of the playoffs. But, you know, it was kind of memorable for his performance as well. And we should have given him a chance 100%. I think in terms of Hyam, I'm not sure how kind of close to the first team he was, you know, at the time of his departure. So I perhaps have a little bit of sympathy for the club on that one. In terms of Rob Dickey, I think it's absolutely clear to me that we should have given him more of an opportunity. He was kind of in and around the first team and then kind of, you know, shipped off. And that was a real disappointment for me. I mean, even in terms of our goalkeeping situation at the moment, you know, I think we're kind of missing out on opportunities, really. We signed Dean Bouzanis, who, you know, part of me was relieved when he signed because we kind of needed a bit of a shake-up in the goalkeeping department. But, know, you've got players like Southwood and Anderson and Boyce Clark who are going to be pushed further kind of back in the pecking order because we've signed an Australian goalkeeper who, you know, has actually done reasonably well at a lower league level, but he's, you know, not going to make us a huge kind of profit in the future. So for me, it's those type of decisions that kind of infuriate me, you know, when we've already got players in the academy that can do a job. And I know that not everyone is going to be good enough. I think, you know, case in point, Ethan Bristow last season really didn't shine. But there are some that are, you know, are clearly ready to make the step up. I think Fossey was one of those. Stacey, I think we should have given Dickie more of an opportunity. And, you know, you've got a point. We can look at, you know, the players that have, you know, signed for the club and some of the awful recruitment decisions, obviously including Aluko and Pushgas. But, you know, when you look at those that we've let go for such a small amount, it's just ridiculous, really. And I'm really glad, actually, that you pointed out Omar Richards, because he was, I think, the only left back at the club at the start of the 2021 season. We'd let go of Tyler Blackett and Jordan Abita. So why are you not tying him down to a longer-term contract at the start of the season, even before he came good? You know, if he's going to be the only left back at the club, we should have had a little bit more faith in him. And unfortunately, the club were too slow to tie him down to a new contract. And that proved to be very costly in the end, because we could have generated quite a bit of money for him, you know, from his sale if he was sold on. So that was a massive disappointment for me as well.
Yeah, in terms of the you know, the ownership of the club has been such a massive point that fans have been speaking about over the last few months and everything with Dai Young. Is there a... Yeah, is there kind of one thing that you think that he has kind of messed up, really? I mean, these, you know, player sales and such, I don't necessarily, well, supposedly maybe they are his decisions, who knows, actually, in the last few years. But another thing I would say is that the general running of the club has just been a little bit too shrouded in mystery for me. And the way that Reading have managed to get various managers and pluck them from complete obscurity a lot of the time, you know, think of Jose Gomez, who did a job but ultimately wasn't good enough and went on. And then we had Velko Paunovic, who, you know, had a good start and everything, did a bit of a job but ultimately couldn't sustain it. Mark Bowen came in and in between those guys, and then on the eve of the season was sacked and moved on, and he's back now. And then we had Paul Ince, who came from complete obscurity again and did a job for a little while and was moved on. Going back further, you can talk about Paul Clement as well. The running of the club, just the lack of talent identification in getting managers, and how on earth we find these managers as well. I mean, you've got to do really extensive research to land the roulette wheel on Velko Paunovic, and yet it's not paying off. We're almost trying to be too clever with getting managers in. And I mean, we'll talk about the manager situation in the other half of the show that we'll do a bit later on. But it's really annoyed me for so many years now that Reading, every time we go for a new manager, it's just been a name plucked out of thin air.
Yeah, it is a bit of a problem. I think I was actually a fan of the Paul Clement appointment when Japs Stan left. I have to be honest with you, when he's turned out to be one of our worst managers kind of ever, really. You know, the football was absolutely dire. So I can't really blame Dai too much for the Clement appointment in my eyes, but some of the other appointments have just been poor. I mean, you look at, you know, Mark Bowen, who, you know, was perhaps one of the best, actually, managers of Dai's tenure, but you know, there wasn't really a lot of research that went into that. He was just given the task of taking the first team forward quite early on in the season, really. And it just seemed like a very lazy appointment. And the appointment of Paul Ince seemed like a very lazy appointment as well. I don't think he did enough, really, Ince, during the latter stage of the 21-22 season to suggest that he should be getting the job on a full-time basis. And the fact that he did get the job, I think, is... I thought it was criminal, really, at the time. You know, I said before the season in one of the roundtable articles that my main concern was Paul Ince, because I just didn't think he was really up to it. And, you know, he did prove me wrong earlier in the season, but in the end, it just kind of, we just declined, really, and it just felt inevitable. So the managerial appointments have really kind of annoyed me. You know, going for a period without a director of football as well, kind of having a clear vision in place, you know, really annoyed me as well. I guess that's part of it, is because, you know, part of the bad managerial decisions, that's partly because we perhaps not had a director of football in place. And I think I honestly don't think Paul Ince gets appointed if Mark Bowen is in place before then, because I think the Ince contract was pretty much finalised before he came in. So, you know, having a director of football now and kind of a head of football operations, I'm hoping that we appoint the man now, right man now. And another thing for me, aside from the managerial kind of situation, is the fact that he needs to communicate with the supporters. And if he did that, then I think a lot of fans would get in the trenches kind of with him. You know, for as long as we decline, Dayong is always going to be the subject of criticism. You know, I'm not naive about that. But if you make an effort to communicate with us, to outline your vision, you know, to build a real connection with the fans, if you did that, you know, from now on, then a lot of people would kind of, you know, be in his favour and we'd be rooting for him. You know, at the end of our day, at the end of the day, you know, his success is our success. So, you know, we don't necessarily want him out, I don't think, a lot of the supporters, but we want him to communicate now. And we've been saying that for years and years and years. And, you know, some people will say, well, you know, we don't want him just to be playing kind of lip service to the fans. But if he did make a real genuine effort, and we can see that he's made a genuine effort to connect with the supporters, then I think a lot of people will be on his side. And the fact that we haven't had that connection, it's a reason why so many fans are just so disillusioned at the moment. And, you know, it's just so sad to see as well that so many fans have become disillusioned. It isn't just COVID and the cost of living crisis that's caused the stadium attendances to be so low. It's the off-field mismanagement as well. And I'm just so sad that we've declined to such a bad point, to be honest with you.
Yeah, with the communication thing as well, I think that for so long they've tried to kind of have it both ways, basically, and say that Dayong's a very private man. We don't really know it. I don't believe he has great English ability, certainly like written English, to produce a statement that we would all consume. I don't believe he has that in himself. So they've tried to be that kind of, you know, we don't need to hear from him. He's not going to speak too often. But then if he's going to be the key decision maker, you do need to justify that in some way. Now, at the moment, obviously, we've got Mark Bowen, who's the head of football. If he's going to be the key communicator, a bit more of the decision maker, then that's fine. You don't need an absolute essential to have an owner who comes out and does everything. You know, there have been owners past and present who tweet all the time and all this sort of stuff, and it doesn't always work. I mean, the bloke at Peterborough winds a lot of people up, so it's not necessarily always good. But I just think that, you know, hopefully now that is something that can move forward in terms of Bowen being the kind of mouthpiece and everything. We've had a bit of a mailbag tweet for you guys to send in some of your thoughts for the Angry podcast. Benjamin Vickers saying he's fed up with Paul Ince throwing the players under the bus. And also Scott saying we won two of the three towards the end of February. And then The Guardian reported the deduction 1st of March. We didn't win a game after that, which indicates Ince and the players were surprised. Yet Bowen admitted as soon as they accepted the prem of the EFL, brackets selling players with £12 million, there was no way they could meet it. You know, thus, they shouldn't have been surprised. Scott saying, why was anyone employed at the club surprised on March 1st? Why were Ince and company not treating the season like we're starting on minus 6 points anyway? Just a good point, because we knew we weren't going to sell £12 million of the players. I guess it's because they probably thought that this land share plan was going to work somehow, but it is true. I mean, let's talk about the players then a little bit. I do think that the players, they were so rallied and gave everything for last season's escape from points deduction. I do think they just didn't have it in them this time. Players like Lucas Shaw fundamentally haven't had very good form this year, whether that's Paul Ince or not. Still, you see Lucas Shaw at the moment, or in the last few weeks, get into those typical positions of, you know, gets a couple of defenders around him, he shimmies one way, drags it back in the box, and then has a shot. He hasn't scored like that for months. And he's, you know, he's been a little bit better since Noel Hunt came in, but he's not had the form or the fitness. Yaku Mate, same, not had the form or fitness. Two of them, you know, our two most important attacking players haven't been at it. Ovie Ajayi has been useless. And several words more than that this season, on and off the pitch, really. You look at players, I mean, then you've got players like Jeff Hendrick, Baba Rahman, who have come in and just do bits and bobs, kind of give you 5 out of 10 every week. There is no way that I think the players aren't the most talented bunch, as we said earlier, but have they really performed? Have they actually kind of stood up and be counted, particularly at the end of the season?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, first and foremost, I think I said it earlier, I don't think I can really fault their effort. I think it's a, I think it's an easy excuse to use. You know, I heard it last season, you know, these players don't care. We've heard it this season with a new set of players. These players don't care. So for me, it's not about commitment. I don't think it has been about commitment during the, you know, kind of the past couple of kind of seasons. I just think it's been about just a lack of quality, really, and maybe a lack of mental strength, maybe towards the latter kind of end of this season. You know, after the 6-point deduction kind of hit, I think we just seemed to collapse, really. And you know, Paul Ince didn't really help our cause at all, really. But there are kind of players that didn't really step up to the plate and kind of perform up to expectations. I think Mamadou Loom is one of those that really, really disappointed me. You know, he couldn't seem to pass the ball more than 5 yards. And for me, that was unforgivable, really, considering he's a professional footballer. So, yeah, I mean, I have focused a lot of my attention on the owners and those at the top of the club. But a lot of the players also have to take responsibility for, you know, for some of their performances. You know, Babar Rahman's been a real disappointment. You know, he wasn't exactly spectacular last season, but, you know, this season has just been very, very poor when available. So, yeah, it's just disappointing as well. Some of the CVs that these players have, I shouldn't mention the word CV with Andy Carroll, but some of these CVs, you know, Jeff Hendrick, I know that they're not the same players anymore, but Jeff Hendrick, you know, has a lot of top tier experience under his belt. So does kind of Babar Rahman. And it's just a shame, really, that these players haven't been able to kind of perform up to expectations. And if they had done, then I think that would have gone a long way in keeping us up. But yeah, I mean, the one good thing is the fact that we kind of can clear out a lot of these players, especially kind of the likes of Hendrick and Rahman.
Well, that's my next question, really. And which players do you definitely not want to see back next season? Because, I mean, certain players like Sam Hutchinson and such are still under contract. Someone like, I mean, you know, Naby Sarr is still going to be here. Ovi Ejaria will still be under contract. People have spoken about Tyrese Fauna being someone that they bring back. I mean, I don't think I would myself. Maybe going back to League One would suit him and everything, but I just don't really see what sort of player he's really meant to be. I don't think I'd have any of the loanees back, to be honest with you. Kind of looking down the list now, Cassidy isn't going to go to League One. Lumley, I don't think there's much point in having Joe Lumley back, as much as he's a perfectly good goalkeeper and he would do a job. I think that the production line for goalkeepers now needs to be focused on actually deciding whether Bouzenis will be the goalkeeper or someone like Boyce Clark. Andreson, Southwood's just had a year in League One and not exactly embarrassed himself, so he would, in theory, would be good enough. So I think you'd save that money and spend it elsewhere. But any players that you definitely don't want to see back?
I think going first for the goalkeeping department, I think Joe Lumley has done a lot better than I thought he would. And unlike a lot of other players, I think he's had very good mental strength, you know, to bounce back from setbacks. So fair play to him. I'm not sure I'd have him back. I think just because he's been kind of scarred by relegation, really, I think, you know, having someone perhaps new between the sticks would be ideal for us. But, you know, I've got to say fair play to him and give him a lot of credit. I think he's probably done enough to earn himself another championship move. I think in terms of our centre-backs, I think Liam Moore and Scott Dan have simply got to go. I would try and keep Naby Sarr. I think he has shone at times this season and will be even more of an asset in a lower division. Tom Holmes, I think, has still got the ingredients to be a good defender, and hopefully he kind of fulfills his potential as well. I think in terms of Tom McIntyre, I'd probably prefer him to be more of a bench option, really. He doesn't really have a best position, I don't think. He's kind of a jack of all trades and master of none, and that's not really his fault because he's been played in so many positions and he hasn't really had a chance to nail down one. But I think I'd probably have him on the bench. If an offer came in for Andy Yeardom, if a suitable offer came in, I think I'd probably accept it. You know, I'd keep him happily if no offers come in for him. But if there's a suitable offer and, you know, we have the chance to, you know, refresh our squad with one or two more additions kind of in his place, then I would 100% go with that. Nesta Guinness-Walker, I think, has done okay. I'd probably just about keep him, I think, maybe on another one-year deal, if possible, you know, kind of monitor him. I don't think he's been absolutely kind of spectacular defensively, and attacking-wise, he's gone off the boil a little bit. But, you know, he showed his potential earlier in the season, and I think he's done enough perhaps to earn himself a small extension. In terms of the midfield, I think we need to have a complete rebuild, really, and I think that's kind of going to be forced. In terms of Fornar, I'd probably take him back if it's a very, very modest, perhaps six-figure fee, especially now we're in League One, maybe 100k and a sell-on clause. But apart from that, 100% and £100,000, I think, and maybe a sell-on percentage or whatever offered to Forest. But apart from that, I wouldn't take him back, I don't think. I feel sorry for him because he's been played out on the left and he's more suited to the middle. You know, he showed his potential at times, but you know, I wouldn't spend a huge amount on him, especially in third tier. Mamadou Loom, 100% won't take back, can't pass a ball. Jeff Hendrick has just been very, very average, I'm afraid. You know, admirable work rate, but our midfield just in its entirety has gone missing. And that's why I wouldn't really, that's why we kind of need a bit of a rebuild in there. Shane Long, I think it might be time to retire. Unfortunately, he's been a legend of this club and, you know, can't fault his commitment, but probably time for him to retire. Lucas Zhao, we can't afford to keep anyway. And Nyeku Mate, I'm going to be sad to see him go. But, you know, it seems inevitable that he'll be gone considering probably his wage demands. So there are quite a few players that I don't want to see back next season. You know, I've gone through a whole list there. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of players leaving at the end of the season. And I, for one, am quite glad about that because we need a rebuild.
Yeah, but the one player there that I do agree with you on is Xander Yeardom. I'd certainly take a fee for him. If, you know, I mean, if you're Xander Yeardom, let's say Luton or Coventry or someone go up and they're looking for a second choice right back in the Prem, you could do worse than sign Xander Yeardom for £100,000 or, you know, £1 million or something like that. It wouldn't be horrendous. And Reading have Kelvin Abraith, who's pretty much ready-made, and I think certainly worth a go as a right-back option going forward, depending on the manager. Let's talk about one last word on the Championship, and then we'll have a quick look ahead to League One. What are you going to miss about the Championship? I mean, are you going to miss the trips to some nice stadiums? You know, you get the likes of, you know, Carrow Road, Bramall Lane, these kind of historic stadiums and everything, and being on the TV so much more than we kind of be in League One. You know, we don't really, the way that the media is these days, you don't really have to worry if Sky Sports News aren't talking about you, but good luck in that ever happening again for the next 12 months. And then, of course, Reading are going to play, I must admit, I'm not looking forward to the Papa John's trophy. Maybe I'll eat my words when I'm at Wembley in March, dancing around with a medal around our neck. But I cannot not looking forward to playing, you know, Chelsea reserves and then two League Two teams, you know, Forest Green or something like that on a really, you know, bothersome Tuesday night in front of 1,000 fans at the Medeski. I just don't feel like that's going to excite me. And you know, in terms of the Championship, I think the one thing that I've missed the most is just the general sense, really, that you're only ever one season away from solving, you know, your next decade. Yeah, look at Coventry, and these teams have obviously taken more than a season to get it together. But you're always in the mix in the Championship to an extent. You've always got the glimmer of hope of getting into the playoffs, and then who knows from there and everything. And it is maybe the hope that kills you, but you do have the hope of that in the Championship, and you ain't got it in League One.
Yeah, it's going to be a massive shame that we can't compete for promotions to the Premier League. I think that's kind of the dreamland, really. And unfortunately, yeah, we're not going to be able to get there next season. So I completely agree with you on that one. That's going to be a big miss. You know, the kind of the opportunity to get to the top flight is something I'm going to miss. I think another thing that I'm going to miss as well is the lack of international kind of the international breaks. I think it's good sometimes to just put your feet up and not have to worry about the football for a while. But with League One football, we're going to be, you know, playing pretty much every week, I think, unless, you know, we sign a load of internationals and kind of have to postpone games. Perhaps that's kind of a strategy that we should pursue, so we can kind of have the chance to put our feet up a little bit. But that's another thing that I'm going to miss as well. And yeah, just the quality of the teams, really, and kind of the quality of the teams on offer, those coming down from the Premier League, and just the opportunity to test ourselves, really, kind of in front of the Sky Sports cameras as well, you know, that was as kind of the main event. And it's just sad, really, you know, that we've kind of, I think historically, a lot of the time been a third tier team, and the fact that we've been in the Championship for so long and in the top two seasons of English football, that was something to be proud of. And even last season, or the season just gone, I was proud of the fact that, you know, we've built up, you know, so John Majewski has built the club up to a position where we expect to be in the top two tiers. And it's just a shame now that we're going to be in the third tier. That's one thing that really saddens me. And I'll miss the championship for many reasons, including those international breaks.
Yeah, last point then I wanted to discuss on League One is my fear, really, that, you know, there's a list of teams that have been relegated from the championship in the last decade of equal-ish size and stature to Reading that quite frankly haven't made it work, or maybe they're, you know, some of these are in the playoffs obviously this year, but you look at Derby, Sheffield Wednesday, Charlton, Wigan, Bolton, Barnsley, Doncaster and Blackpool. I think there's a good chance that one of those won't be in League One next season, obviously from the playoffs, but otherwise you're looking at teams that are around about the same size as Reading that it doesn't always work. I suppose the big one there is Derby. You obviously have the financial and transfer situation similar-ish to Reading, maybe a bit worse actually. Charlton are maybe a little bit of a different case because of their ownership situation has been just more bonkers than ours has. But there is a fear that Reading will slip into that. And this, on that measure, the last question that I'll ask you, Adam, this part of the show is, if you could fix one thing about Reading, what would it be? If you could make one thing just better, for me, it'd be the academy. I know that we often hold up the academy as the kind of shining light of the club, but I think it needs a good old, you know, not shake up or anything like that, but just a fixing and doing better, because I'm not sure that I look at many of the academy players at the moment and see kind of future Championship Premier League stars, or, you know, if there are there, I don't know if we've really given them the chance anyway. So I think fixing that, getting us back to the Category 1 status, I think would be really big. Whether we can do that in League 1 or not is kind of TBC. But, I just feel like the Academy has underwhelmed in the last two or three seasons, kind of Michael Olise aside. No one's really come through and really shown, you know, I'm going to be a future Premier League player. So I think if I'd fix one thing about the club, be the Academy.
Yeah, I think I'd 100% agree with you on the academy. That we need to find a way of bridging the gap and shortening the gap between the first team and the academy. I think one other mistake that we've made is the fact that we haven't loaned a lot of players out really in recent seasons. I think getting the likes of Jamari Clark out to Forest Green Rovers, I think, is very valuable. So the fact that we haven't been able to kind of, or the fact that we just haven't kind of offloaded quite a few players temporarily to other clubs. I mean, you know, part of that is forced, obviously, because of our lack of squad depth. I mean, the likes of a Breffel would probably be going out on loan if they weren't involved in the first team or needed in the first team. So that's what one reason, I think, why our academy players haven't been as good in recent years. I think some of them had kind of less time to prepare as well. I think, as I was alluding to, you know, I think a year or two ago, we had like the Medford Smith kind of the generation, or that kind of year of players, and a lot of them are released. I think it may have been back in 2020. So a lot of the players that we have, likes of Jamari Clark, have had kind of a couple of less years, or a couple of maybe one or two less years to prepare for senior football, and perhaps need a little bit more time to just kind of shine and kind of, you know, prepare themselves and maybe kind of shine out on loan as well. So that's one thing, definitely. And I also think the communication, I know that it may not have any kind of on the field benefits having that communication from above, but just to have that kind of that connection between the ownership and the fans again, and the feeling that we're all together as one, I think communication would help that, you know, definitely between the CEO, the owner, the director of football. We need everyone to be together, you know, the fans as well, the players. We need absolutely everyone to be together. And that was key to our success, you know, in recent years, obviously with our promotions, that has been absolutely key. So, you know, just having that communication, and hopefully that was kind of make things feel better off the pitch as well, and kind of, you know, maybe bring good vibes. I think that the good vibes have just gone, haven't they, really? And maybe that's partly down to on-field results, most definitely, but also because of the off-field situation. I think if we can get that sorted and we can get kind of fans kind of back to the stadium and connected again, and also get, you know, younger fans involved as well. Obviously, we've had the Scorch initiative and we should be doing more of those. You know, just get people to the stadium and get people supporting a team, you know, get as many people supporting the team as possible at the SEL, get as many bums on seats as possible. I think, you know, that would perhaps help if we had a little bit more communication from the club. I think we'd perhaps increase our attendances, but we'll soon see what happens, won't we?
Yeah, for sure. Right, well, this is the end of the first half of our doubleheader. So do please join us for the second half, the optimistic show. I'm really interested to see the viewership figures as to how they vary between these shows, by the way. And the final thing I'm going to do for this part of the podcast is this is a good time to reveal the results of our prediction league, which has been running all season between myself, Simeon Pickup, Ollie Allen, Westy Handbags, Ben Thomas, and Adam. The wooden spoon is going to go to Ollie Allen with 21 points. Unfortunately, not just a couple of results, a couple of score lines that Ollie perfectly predicted this season. Then it's myself on 22, slightly above Handbags on 24 points. In fourth place is actually, we have a tie for third between Ben Thomas and Sim. They're both on 28 points. Then we have yourself, Adam, on 30 points. And Westy, who got legitimately 1 point in the first 13 weeks of the season, takes the victory. He got three correct score lines in a row not that long ago. Basically, since Reading started playing badly, he's done away with the prediction. So congratulations to Westy. 35 points gives him the crown for the season. And with that, we'll bid you farewell. Please join us for the second half of the show, or second half of this doubleheader, rather, where we'll be a little bit more optimistic. Come on, you ass. It's